suspended than if you don't shift it.
Now, Senator Scobell, before you came in, Senate Bill 634 mm-hmm. is the bill number, and I got an opportunity to speak with Representative Patridge regarding 634,
mm-hmm.
and he is one of the sponsors on 634 with Senator Castillo and others. I'm not sure who the rest of the sponsors are, but he felt very positive about the hearings process because it does have some bipartisan support, and so that doesn't address the exact issue that we're on. It does come back to the 634 issue that the Senate bill and they're ready to read.
If it should pass, since it does take some money to fund, is there going to be money for it?
It's my understanding that they're that if there is money to fund it, they anticipate that it may pass, that it would pass. And
my guess is it will pass, but it probably will pass out of the Senate committee, is that where it is?
Yes, sir.
And to the floor, and probably pass on the floor, and then it'll come to Ways and Means, and then it'll be up to Ways and Means to fund it. And the question is there money so it can be funded?
I believe that they're anticipating that there is going to be money to fund it.
Great. How much are we talking about?
It's about $355,000, I believe, and that will be for the ready to read, and it will move all of the local programs from 75 cents per youngster in the community per registered library card, I guess, in the community to a dollar throughout the state.
That's such a good program.
Yes, it is. It's an excellent program.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Krupp is recognized.
Thank you. I'd like to go on record saying that I fully intend to support Senate Bill 634, and I intend to work for its passage. It's my understanding that they believe they have the funds to cover that additional amount of money. And I think that, as I said yesterday, there are a few things that I believe in more strongly than public safety first and foremost. But when it comes to reading, and for the marvelous work these people do for practically nothing, and for the way that they leverage the small amount of resources we give them with volunteers to make a difference in so many children's lives, whether it's in public, private school, homeschooled, or not schooled at all, is pretty amazing to me. And I really want to give you credit where credit is due. Given the cutbacks you've had over the years, the direction you've moved, again, you are a model, I think, for many state agencies to follow in terms of your efficiency and using what you've got. And I admire that tremendously, and I fully support you whatever I can to make sure that we get that full amount in Senate Bill 634.
Thank you.
We're trying to work out how we could, if the difficulty that we've got is if we fund a portion of that, then we're going to have to deny the package 102, and 103 then would go out as well, the shifting of that position. And if we came down and under the current service level, let's see, we've already approved the governor's budget, which would include the $45,000.
Can I have a clarification?
Please make it, if you will.
One thing, Mr. Shepke, you had mentioned before that there is another fund that is for miscellaneous receipts, and it's about $72,000, and that is a possibility that money could be used in talking book and braille service. I put $5 in this.
Yes, you did. And by the way, we're in our piggy bank.
And you still have the same mind that money could be used?
Mr. Chair, that's a possibility.
If that's the case, then what we are actually doing here in shifting it is saying we want it to be funded with other funds. It doesn't necessarily mean it has to come out of the donation fund. And if there are other funds available to fund this.
So there are other funds.
I would just say, Mr. Chair, that miscellaneous receipt amount, I believe, is already budgeted elsewhere in our budget. So it's not, it's not anything that hasn't already been put somewhere else.
Okay. So where we're at then is that package 102 would be modified in such a fashion that it would come from the general funds and move to the other funds, which would be the other funds, and the net effect of that on the budget would still be at zero. And then package 105.
Package 105 is the purchase of the system's furniture. And that, in talking to the State Library the other day, they said that they indicated that package really was only going to take $71,305. And so what I have done is I backed out $21,695 from that package, but I recommend that the package be approved. The only thing I would unschedule this package because Mr. Shepke has indicated to me that they are going to try to pay for part of the package in this biennium if possible. If that's the case, they won't need the full $71,305.
But they wouldn't lose the remaining portion that they lost. They would still be within their carryover funds.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Are there any questions about the net effect of package 105, having approved 105 in its entirety, but modifying it by $21,695 to a total of $71,305? And then unscheduling the $71,305 so that with the recommendation of the Department of Administrative Services with Legislative Fiscal Office that all or a portion of the $71,305 unscheduled could be scheduled for distribution. Any questions about that?
That sounds okay, and that's okay with you folks?
Yeah. Okay. Senator Lim is recognized.
Yeah, I'm concerned it's $45,000. That they come from the other funds.
Yes,
and that it may have some problem funding this $25,000. At the same time, we do not know the date that the SB 634 yet.
No, and it's not in 634 is not considered here.
Not considered.
No, it's not. It would be additional funds which would flow through, and it would be by separate budget action. And once it passes the Senate, then we would take separate action on it, and we should, I would hope that we would be close enough to our May forecast and finishing up the rest of our budgets by that time, that we would be in a position to know exactly what could be funded.
Okay. At the same time, I want to, that the $45,000, I think it should come from the general fund, not from the other fund.
Yes, and it does.
But we are shifting to the other fund.
We're shifting to the other fund, that's right.
But already the plans for the funds, so I don't think they can come up with much money.
They do have the money presently. It's already in the account, Senator Lund.
But are you sure that the if not agreeing that there's no money in it? Already they plan to use that money already for something else.
They haven't scheduled it for anything else to be used on anything at this time. Mr. Shepke, would you like to respond to Senator Lund's issues?
Two different funds.
They're two different other funds.
Yes. If I could clarify that.
Yes, could you?
When I asked Mr. Shepke the other fund, which is interest or is miscellaneous receipt, that is another portion of the other fund. Where another other fund that we were talking about is the donation fund, and all I'm saying is that we are shifting it to another fund. It doesn't, wherever it is appropriate to use other funds for this particular package, that's their option.
Yes, I know, but my question is, could they use this fund to replace this money? The other miscellaneous donations or whatever. I just want to hear from them, they could use that money. Do they have enough funds to fund this program? for the volunteer coordinator.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, we do have miscellaneous receipt revenue, but we have earmarked that for things other than funding a position in the next biennium. One of the things we're going to try to do with it is buy systems furniture, and that's how we can reduce package 105. And you know, we could be directed to use miscellaneous receipts for the position in package 102. We didn't intend to do that, and the board is opposed to using donation funds to fund a permanent mailroom position at the state library.
This is the issue. You know, board opposed it, and then already the miscellaneous funds already planned for something else. All
right. Let me make sure that I understand, though. The are you planning on purchasing more furniture than the $93,000? Okay, so the funds that they have set aside at this particular time, they're going to be using to buy a portion of this $71,305 worth of furniture in this biennium, the one that we're in right now. And what we're doing is we're going to go ahead and approve the full furniture package, and then we're going to go ahead and unschedule it, and then whatever they need to fund either the furniture or the three-quarter time coordinating position at $45,000, they will use it. I guess they'll use it for either thing, because if they use it, all it takes is just Department of Administrative Service and Legislative Fiscal Office oversight to go ahead and approve the use of those funds for either the furniture or either the package, which is package 102.
Yeah. And one other clarification. My understanding is furniture was in the library services package, and that is funded out of the assessments to the agencies, not out of miscellaneous receipts. Is that correct?
My understanding is that we do intend to use the miscellaneous receipts funds that are not assessment funds to purchase furniture in this biennium.
In this biennium or next biennium?
In this biennium. And possibly in next biennium. But that's one of the ways we've planned to finance the system's furniture.
Mr. Chair.
Please, Mr. Rager, or Fager, would you please help us?
For the record, Dave Fager, DAS, Budget Management Division. The miscellaneous receipts cash is authorized to be used for those kinds of purposes. The reason that there is some confusion as to how the money is going to be spent is because the state library has budgeted in the governor's recommended budget their best guess on how they're going to finish this biennium and budget next biennium. However, they're still trying to juggle funds around to cover the salary packages and looking at other requirements that pop up, like the systems furniture. So it's probably a little bit of a dynamic issue. There are three other fund spots, and as we discussed that, I would assume, as LFO would, that we're not discussing the use of assessment funds for any of these purposes. Just wanted to clarify that.
For the furniture, it is appropriate to use the other funds, the assessment funds.
For furniture purchased in those budget areas, yes, correct.
What's the second and third of the other funds? There's the donations funds.
There's donations, miscellaneous receipts, and statewide assessment. All of those have very specific uses, assessment being probably the most specific along with donations. And then miscellaneous receipts is generally usable in a variety of fashions. But traditionally, we would first look to the agency to have them pay for the expenses of providing services rendered for those miscellaneous receipts, if there were any.
Sure. Before I call on Representative Krupp, I want to make sure that we understand something was brought out abundantly in our full ways and means this morning, and that was that when
that items such as the statewide assessments are basically charges that come in to benefit other governmental agencies, and that money, and I've got a letter from another member of the House that they would like to have us come back and modify that and reduce that that statewide assessment, and I'm not going to go there, but what's happening is that you have other general funds already in this budget, and it's coming in the form of other funds. And so I want to have everyone abundantly clear that we have an other fund in here that is general fund that's already been tapped from the general fund, and there is another, as I say, a member of the House from the other caucus that would like to see us go in and take a substantial reduction in that, and I don't want to go there, folks. I just as soon not tamper with these other funds. However, legislative fiscal is recommending that $45,030 of package 102 be shifted from the general fund, because there already are general funds in the other fund to accommodate the utilization of the 45. Now, Senator Lim, are we clear on that?
I'm clear, but Mr. Chair, I don't expect to hear from you again.
Okay. Well, I'm good enough at accounting that I can count. So,
you're talking about the fund that we considered the fund that they've received donations in.
Well, there's three different other funds. There's an assessment fund. There's the donation fund,
mm-hmm.
which is separate and apart. And there's a statewide assessment fund, which funds are charged on the basis of full-time equivalency in all of the rest of the state agencies. And that becomes it's an other fund, which is general state general funds that are transferred in here. And what we're saying is if there is sufficient cash to go ahead and move package 102 basically
into the agency,
into the other fund and out of the general fund.
But you're not talking then now about the fund that's created by contributions?
No. Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry. Representative Kraft, you were next.
That's okay. Page 36, a detail of other funds and federal funds. The top half of the page is other funds. And I see five categories of other funds. Miscellaneous income, interest income, sales, donations, and assessments there. But in the 99-2000 budget, they're only showing money coming in on four of those funds, not showing anything on the miscellaneous income up at the top. And I was curious to know why that wasn't what interesting was in the miscellaneous.
Mr. Chair, I'd have to ask my business manager what miscellaneous income consisted of in the past.
I believe
Mr. Adams, can I have you come to the microphone, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Representative Kraft. My name is Keith Adams. The miscellaneous income that had been reported previously were for some miscellaneous items that we now class into those other groups. It's the same types of revenue, but their classification is just a little bit different.
And Mr. Chair, and Keith, what is sales? That is, I know we've talked about it before, but I'm not ringing a bell.
We have various types of sales. And we have copy cards, where people buy copy cards, they can get full copies, different types of publications that we produce.
So you have, if I may, Mr. Chair, please go on.
You're going to reduce your categories of other funds to four, to interest income, sales, donations, and assessments then.
Right.
And essentially your miscellaneous income you're rolling into one of these other categories.
Probably the sales income.
Probably sales income. Okay. All right. Thank you. And a question for Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Strauss.
The director, you're anticipating on page 37 a beginning balance. Is your beginning balance money, is that all essentially spoken for currently?
I'd have to have some help with that. I assume so, but I wouldn't know the details.
Again, for the record, Dave Fazer, Gas Budget Management. The other funds as displayed on the page that you're referring to, Representative Krupp, does include all other funds balances, which does include state assessment. I do want to be very clear here that if we're discussing using assessment dollars to pay for activities in the TBABS program, that is a substantial change in state policy. Currently, we do not allow the state library to assess for anything except central administration, not any of their direct programs.
I don't think I'd want to cancel the assessment. That's the new funding mechanism for the state library, and I think the state assessment should remain constant. I guess I would, if we had to, I would prefer using money out of the nation's fund rather than tampering with the state library.
We're down about two options, and that is that fund that attacks 102 is denied in its entirety, and we don't want to go there.
How essential is that package? Do you want to give that package up rather than using that?
That is our mailroom person. Okay. And it's not a new position. It's moving an individual from the mailroom that you can almost see through the trees over to the other side of the building, and that person is essentially moving to talking books. So that person needs to be paid. So that person can no longer be paid by assessment funds as they're being paid right now. Now, I would just remind the committee that in the governor's recommended budget, we funded this by not taking the inflation increase for the ready-to-read grant program. So that is how we funded this position. And so as far as we're concerned, it's already funded. If our budget has to be cut in the general fund, if we have to derive some general fund savings from our budget by shifting personnel to other sources of funds other than the general fund, I can offer the fundraiser position because that would be consistent with the board's policy on donations. They're thinking about donations. I realize it's a different amount of money, but that savings would be consistent with the board's thinking because they have said that we are okay with the fundraiser being paid for by donation funds. I mean, there are
how do you budget this position is already paid for with the inflation money? Right. That didn't go into the base, but went into this position.
No. The 0.75.
Mr. Chair, Senator Crow, yes, that position in the governor's budget, the 0.75 in the package, is funded by existing dollars that the agency received from inflation in the current service level for the Ready to Read program that they are proposing to move over to fund a higher priority program, TBAS.
The partial funding of that particular position or the full funding for that particular position, Mr. Fager?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I believe that is full funding along with some miscellaneous expenditures. That it's full funding for a 0.75 FTE.
Oh, okay. And
that 45,000
didn't all come from Ready to Read. There was another source that you shifted.
Oh, I see.
This Representative Leonard.
In Ways and Means this morning, we talked about this a little bit, the policy.
you recall, as we were discussing
yes.
cuts, and it seemed to me that the message from co-chair Timms was, at least you tell me if you interpret it differently, but my interpretation was that we had to be judicious in where we applied these 4% cuts, and sometimes they made sense and sometimes they didn't. I think I'm prepared to argue this one might meet that criteria and does not make sense. And we're talking about $45,000 from the general fund, and I'd sure rather leave that here and look in some other agency budget for that amount, particularly for the service this provides.
And this isn't a number one, it isn't a full 4%, it's a 2%. And that is a general fund item, and it basically shifts it over to one of the other funds. And so it leaves all positions intact and the service intact with the funds that are in fact available. The difficulty here is that we get the donations board of directors that are encouraging them not to utilize any of those funds for the mail-in person, but could be used for the fundraising person. But the fundraising person, if we went that direction, then we would have to deny package 102 entirely, which would go back and modify 103, because that's the three-quarters position which is shifted. So there's only two choices that we're left with at that particular point, and that is that we deny 102-103, or that we shift 102 as recommended by Legislative Fiscal Office between the general fund, out of the general fund, and then to the other fund, and proceed in that fashion.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is I think there's a third option, and given what I heard this morning, again, I'd be interested to hear differently. Sometimes these cuts make sense, and sometimes they don't. And for the amount of money we're saving for the harm that we're causing, I just don't see it.
I guess I'm having trouble seeing a harm. I need to identify, because they are still. The issue was, don't cut where the service delivery is damaged. And I'm having trouble seeing where the service delivery would be damaged in this particular instance.
So you're talking about still package 102 being funded through the donations?
That's exactly right. And not through the donations, but through the other funds, which are part of the general funds, and in fact, that come out of the state, or from the other assessments that come from the use of the library.
But I understood Department of Administrative Services saying that's a problem.
Go ahead.
Can I clarify? There are two areas that this can be taken out of. One is the donation fund, and the other one is miscellaneous receipts.
Okay.
The,
enough money there.
There's $72,559 in miscellaneous receipts, and so yes, to cover this package, there is adequate limitation or adequate funds there.
Where do I find that in anything that I have?
It would be in the ABIS report.
ABIS?
Just a second. Well, I don't know what that stands for. You can charge me if you want. I have no idea.
No.
But I looked it up here just a moment ago, and there's in sales income on their report under revenue, it's for this upcoming biennium, it's $72,559.
But what do they normally use that income for? That income for?
Well, actually, they can use it for multiple places, because it is not designated to go to any one place.
In this, okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp is recognized. Thank you. But I thought you said that you already essentially spent that money in another area. Where are you going to spend that money in another area, and how is it going to affect you?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, my business manager tells me that it's budgeted in library development. So I assume that it's paying for the services and supplies of the library development division.
That's correct.
And that's the division that delivers ready-to-read and the ready-to-read program and the other programs that I showed you in my presentation that help local libraries. So that would just shift the pain to that unit of the library where we need to do that. We don't have miscellaneous receipts that are just sitting around not being utilized in some way. That's important.
It was my understanding that the portion of the $74,000 that you have on hand now would be used to commence the purchase of the package nullified furniture. Is that not?
That may be part of what we do in library development, because our choices there for systems furniture, we can't use the assessment funds in library development. So we either have to use federal funds or miscellaneous receipts.
But the budgeting for a net on the recommended budget, we're budgeting for a net of $71,305, and so it would be utilized for the furniture and fixtures. But if it's already on hand, the $70,000+ that we're anticipating in the next year would leave you whole at that particular point. And the $70,000+ in receipts, that it's already on hand. We already have the money on hand, and we're budgeting for another $70,000+ in the next year. And that's where we're saying the $45,000 could jump from $45,030.
And actually, I think the budget package helped me here, but I think it's actually in library services. That's where it is in the ABIS report, and those are assessments.
Dave Fazer, DASBAM, that is correct.
Okay, so it's not miscellaneous receipts.
Can I make a clarification on that?
Please, go ahead, Ms. Sharon.
The package was put into library services because of the mechanics of the budgeting process. We were originally looking at certificates of participation. The instructions were we had to put them in one package somewhere. That's the only reason it appears in library services, because it is for the entire agency. The funding is split between various sources, general fund, miscellaneous receipts, and originally we have looked at federal funds.
Well, in Solomon's wisdom, we're going to have to do something here. We're going to have to divide the baby, or we're going to have to go ahead and give the baby away. And I hesitate to feel in my own mind comfortable that the funds are on hand. And that there are budgeted for the next biennium to receive sufficient that it will cover the $45,030. But if we don't have support from the Senate side, or there are still issues that are pending on the House side of the subcommittee, then we're going to have to go back and put the whole budget on ice until such time as they determine which funds or which packages they need, because basically package 102 and 103 are going to have to go away if we're not going to use them from the, and that will leave that will basically leave the current service level in the general fund, and which is approximately $10,000 increase in the general fund at that particular point. And but unfortunately, then 102, 103 are basically gone, and the furniture package would stay in place at the 71,305.
Sir, you know, I don't think we're terribly far away from agreement. Could you tell us what you did, what you're going to recommend about the $5,000+ that will go to the emergency fund?
Well, thank you, Senator. That's an excellent question. This budget is so well managed. I mean, when we're down to $58 of general fund reduction or miscellaneous fund reduction, I'm recommending that there be absolutely no set aside for any kind of an emergency fund.
That's good. Appreciate
it. No, we recognize that would not be an appropriate thing to do, and I appreciate your counsel in that regard, and we accept that counsel.
I guess I don't understand the current service level issue, because as I understand it, they've eliminated one position, or three quarters of one position in one area, transferred to another area.
Those are proposed in the packages 102 and 103.
But they only did that for a technical reason, as I understood it, that actually was part of current service level if they would have stayed in the places that they were at the loading dock, right?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Major Dash, Budget Management, thank you very much. The only item that comes from current service levels is the funding, the general fund itself. The position itself exists. It's proposed for transfer in two policy packages, minus from one, plus to another.
If we eliminate policy package 102, you're essentially not at current service level. Is that right?
We do lose the $45,000 of general fund that was offered up in the Ready to Lead program for current service level.
What about the three-quarter full-time equivalent position?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leonard,
being transferred to the Talking Book and Braille Services staff.
That is the proposal to do that. If that is not approved, then the other package would not be approved to accept the position, and we would keep the positions where they are now, funded in the governor's base budget.
Mr. Chair,
Senator, I'm wondering. I know you're on the bond because this is not what you want to do, but you're told that you've got to find some savings from this budget. And that's a difficult position to be in. And I think you see you've got a subcommittee that generally is very friendly to this agency. You said you're willing and you think we'll find money for that bill that's going to come, which will fund the Ready to Read program, and that would be a tremendous thing. I just wonder if it wouldn't be possible for you and Leslie's fiscal staff and for Mr. Shepke and Mr. Fraser just to get together. Maybe you don't need to be there. Maybe you do. Whatever you want to do.
Normally, I've been meeting with
you. Why don't you see if you can just hammer it out now. I think we're close. I mean, the chair has really accommodated you on a number of things. It's going to be a pretty darn good budget, I think. So I wonder if we can't work this out, because I don't think we can do it here.
Okay. And as I said earlier, we're down to just a couple of choices that we can make, and I really don't want to go in and disallow the 102, 103, and that, incidentally, that package, that $45,000 comes in part reduced from other funds, $15,388, as well as from the TDAB, and then the library-based budget adjustments that comes from the general fund, $29,642. That's what makes up the $45,030. So a portion of it has been general funded, and a portion has come from the TDAB. So in the past, so I think, with Senator Crow's recommendation, we will get back to the state library. Is there any urgency to pass this? Because we're...
Why don't you, while you have it all fresh in your mind, get together?
We can certainly do that. I think what we'll do is we'll go ahead and close the public hearing portion of the... portion of the hearing on the Oregon State Library Senate Bill 5524, and then with the excellent counsel from Senator Crow to come back and try to reach agreement,
and then see if we can't bring a budget back that's agreeable to the members of the committee and that's acceptable to the state library folks and their boards that cover the donations and assessments and those kinds of things as well. And we'll just have to take it back out. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and close that.
Chair, I just want to thank you for looking at this issue again.
Absolutely.
I would appreciate it.
Absolutely. And Senate Bill 634, we would appreciate your support on the Senate side on 634 so that we can get the full support that we're after and be ready to read. We'll close that again. Thank you very much. And would you please make arrangements to get together with the best time on my schedule for the next week will be between 4 and 6 in the morning.
He'll be there.
Folks are laughing.
And he'll be there.
Thank you. Senator, I appreciate you.
Appreciate you willing to do that.
Very much so. We've asked the Secretary of State to come forward. We've worked through his and we'll.
Yeah. I don't think so. I don't figure out this in my life. But I don't know. It's hard to make it.
Yeah. Well, we've got a forum, so let's go ahead and let's go ahead and open with the forum. We'll open. This is the work session on Senate Bill 5536, Secretary of State. We're honored to have you with us, Secretary of State Phil Kiesling. Thank you for coming. As I said repeatedly, if you don't like it, if you want to continue to eat sausage, never go and watch it in May. So this is one of those issues that, however, we appreciate you being here. And we have met extensively, and I appreciate the kindness of Secretary of State Phil Kiesling being with us and having worked with us closely on these budget issues. We've each received a copy of a memorandum from Mr. Dallas Wyand, our legislative fiscal officer for the day. I failed to recognize Jamie Penn, our clerk, and we've had Katie Cannon with us up to this point. And we'll turn the floor to Mr. Wyand, if he will go ahead and take us through the budget issues as we have resolved in the Secretary of State, having had public hearings on this budget, and we're ready for the work session now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, before you, there's a memorandum which is a little lengthy. I know I just handed it out. The budget issues, as you remember, attached to it is a kind of summary bringing the budget forward to the agency request. And at the the public hearing, the Secretary of State voluntarily withdrew some packages and was willing to make some other adjustments. He has since worked with he and his staff on the budget request, and with your permission, if you would like me to go through from his request, or would you like to go?
Secretary Kiesling, do you have any preference? Should we just start with the legislative approved budgets, 97, 99, and
work from there? Mr. Chair, I think that would be fine.
Okay.
The legislatively approved budgets for that was up through April of 98. the general fund and other funds there aggregated a total of $33.4 million. Over and above that, for to bring it up to the current service level, there is an estimated cost of position actions for this biennium. If you'll notice there, there's a reduction in other funds and an increase in general fund support. This is principally due to the support provided the elections division by the information systems people. In the prior biennium, information systems was principally other funded, which came out of corporations and audits usually, but it's doing a great deal of work in support of the elections division, which is general funded, so this budget request adjusts for that staffing, the use of those staff. It is a change in a shift in the prior biennium. It was probably somewhat underfunded the general fund, and this is to address that and put the funding on parity with workload for the information systems people. The next line is some cost of merit increases that are budgeted. These come again out of the personal information system of. Personnel Information and Control System of the state, I think, is the something like that. It's the state's personnel management system. We've separated some in our line item. The PERS rate adjustment, as you know, the House Bill 3349, and there was a rate adjustment. So we separated it and brought it to the enact, put it into place this biennium. That increase is reflected in a separate line item. There are some increased costs for the Department of Administrative Services, a very small amount for personal services. There's some adjustments for vacancy factors. We'll discuss that a little bit later on. I think there's some vacancies that we'll have some savings because of filling vacancies in the next biennium. Then the inflationary increase for goods and services is the standard inflation increase of the Secretary of State. Did ask for and received an exemption a little bit for paper. Inflation, the cost of paper for principally the bonus paper is expected to increase a little more than 2.8% or whatever it was. And they were granted that increase so that they didn't have enough to fund the paper for a single issue bonus paper. The state government service charge increase, these are the across the board increase for Department of Administrative Services. And the Attorney General. And what is reversed or backed out of here are one-time costs. These have to do with special election, also some one-time costs for automation that were granted in the 97-99 biennium. Those have been backed out. And there's a little bit of an adjustment to non-limited funds. Principally, that's to get rid of double counting of some funds in audit division. They were counted non-limited and unlimited. This just removes it. And if we prevent double counting with the increase. This brings us up to a current service level here that I should remind the city that it does not include any money for the potential of a primary election, the presidential primary in March, because that's an extraordinary type of item, nor does it include funds for the potential of a double issue voter stamp. So there are bills out there now that would remove or get rid of the March presidential primary. There are also bills out there that would affect the size of the voters' campus, so those monies may not be needed in the budget. They are not included in the current level of service. They are considered to be outside of that. So,
can we comment on that in the budget narration so that they know that they have some direction if they have these expenses?
Yes. In fact, the intent was a budget note in terms of the emergency bill. If, in fact, the bill did pass, that there would be, in fact, a presidential primary in March that you'd have to pay for, and if, in fact, the voter stamp that would require a double issue, it would be a yes. Okay. That would be no decision.
The deduction for the less one-time cost of $1,299,000, is that the special election associated with HJR 7 and a couple others?
Member of 96.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I think it was the measures 51 and 52, the physician assisted suicide, and the bonds for lottery bonds for schools, November 97.
Yes,
okay. This is Okay, this is the adjustment from last.
Right.
From last. Okay.
I talked at the Postal Service level where a number of packages presented in the Secretary of State's budget, and briefly I will review those. We went over them, I believe, in the public hearings, but just to refresh our minds. The first one was Package 121, is Package 121, and this is to reclassify archives positions to give them their own classification personnel-wise. It's, they've had a very difficult time filling positions. They believe the duties of archivists have changed, and they in the past have been equated with clerical type of people. They're requiring much more professional type of backgrounds, advanced degrees, master's degrees, and the like. So this package is to reclassify those positions upwards, archives positions, those that aren't in the showroom, those that are out there dealing with the public and the like, are general funded. The package 142 was to take two mailroom positions that are currently contracted with the Martin Foundation, and they have been on
contract.
141, I'm sorry, yes. And to put them on full time. There's an adjustment later to back out the contract costs that were associated with that in the budget. They forgot to reduce the budget by the amount that was being paid out in contract.
I'm a mistake.
Yeah. Package 142, because of turnover and the like, was the personal services group terribly understaffed, not by any of the allowed 3/4 of an FTE to help catch up. This is a request for one additional position. As you'll see, we can reduce that for the field. If the reclassifications are approved, it should improve their ability to recruit and retain people and reduce the need for that additional person. And the funds are split between where the services would be provided, the general fund positions and archives and the like, and elections and the other funds in the principal audits division. The package 143 was a request, conceptually they felt that they'd like to put in the budget and current service level or put in the monies for continual hardware, software, computer upgrades. And that agency infrastructure was the nomenclature. This is one of the packages that Secretary of State was doing during the public hearing. We will see that on the next page. Package 144 is an audit risk assessment, as a proposal to develop an audit risk assessment for automation, where audits division would work with information systems, and information systems would help them come up with ways to assess risk using automation to improve the capability of the audits division. Package 145 is an Oregon voter registration package. The Secretary of State requested we take that off. There's a separate bill out there now that would do this, make it policy that we have centralized voter registration package. So we asked that money be taken off from here. If money more, it should be with that bill, I think.
Withdrawn on the second page.
It's withdrawn on the second page, actually. Yes. Package 151 is to provide two limited duration positions. These are the corporations division to help corporations division establish identification numbers for all of the corporations that are registered that are consistent with those in revenue department, the employment department, commerce and consumer and business services department, so that you can access the same company or a registered corporation, you can track them through the different government agencies with the one number. This has been ongoing for a number of years, I believe. Employment and revenue are now hooked up to the same number now corporations and regions within the campaign. These are too limited duration, only for this biennial to accomplish that. And then Package 171 is to address the severe problem that audit division is having retaining people. It competes in the private sector to recruit. It seems it's having a problem, but it is able to recruit, but they're quite honestly losing people to private sector as well as other government agencies. They can't pay them as much as other state agencies will pay for internal auditors, controllers, and the like. And this is a package to reclassify all of the auditors' positions. They are looking into it. They've had consultants come and look, and this is the package to fund that. It's all underfunded. that brings us up to what is the agency request. And I footnoted that because the governor's original printed budget, as presented, excluded about $6.4 million to make it balanced. However, the Secretary of State is not subject to the governor's budgeting restriction. And so we really are dealing with the agency request. $16.8 million general fund and $23.8 million $3.9 million That's what the agency requests. We try to get away from the governor's rec. It doesn't agree with the governor's recommended number because of that exclusion, that one line adjustment.
We have their, in the agency request, we have the current service level and the addition of a number of packages.
Yes.
And because those packages are modified, and the adjustments to the questions, the withdrawal, the subsequent withdrawal, I've requested that we just proceed forward from that point without any action on the agency request.
To the revised Secretary of State request?
So we'll go to the revised Secretary of State request.
Yes, during the public hearings, the Secretary of State requested some adjustments that can be to accommodate those that are shown here. The new amounts, the new requests, are $10.4 million general fund, $23.5 of other funds, and the non-limited $163,000. Getting from here, we'll work to our recommended adjustment. Package 132, as you remember, was to add a personnel position. We are recommending that it not be funded. This is in discussion with Secretary of State staff that with the reclassifications, the subcommittee indicated they approved the concept of the reclassifications, and that with those, they felt that the workload in personnel wouldn't be as bad as it has been. They could live without this additional position. So that is one FTE and a reduction in both general and other funds. A reduction of package 141. 141, as you remember, is the mail-in positions. This is, these people will be hired, and they aren't eligible for PERS. I don't use PERS. Public Employees Retirement System for the first 6 months. Thank you, sir. And this would just reflect the savings on the OP for the other person. For those two positions there, that there's no need to contribute to the public employees and retirement system for the first 6 months. Also, with respect to that same package, those two positions, they have been with the Secretary of State's office, so the need for certain supplies and services are reduced. They don't need, there's usually a standard almost allowance that's granted to new employees. This is not necessary here. This would reduce the services and supplies. Not 100% because they want to keep some money that they need to work with the Dart Foundation as a consultant once in a while with these individuals. But it does reduce, it reduces some of that money. There's also in package 151, which are the two limited duration positions. We made the same adjustment for the Public Employees Retirement System contribution, that there would be no need to put all that money in there. So we made that reduction again. It's in other funds. As you're aware, there was a reduction in the Attorney General rate from $92 to $90 an hour. Spread across the board, that equates to a $12,156 saving in the Secretary of State's budget. $10,100 of it is general fund, and that's a lot of, most of that is because of the elections and the ballot measures and the challenges and the like. So, and the remainder is spread throughout with audits and others. There also were salary savings in the archives new hire. There's one vacancy they intend to hire. There will be some salary savings from the Public Employees Retirement System again for that new hire. Audits Division, as we mentioned, has a number of vacant positions. When we reviewed what we pay the new people versus what the positions were funded at in the budget, that there wouldn't be a need for all of that money, that they would bring them in at lower rates. And there would also be the savings from the contribution for Public Employees Retirement System. So there's a reduction there, there's a reduction in the other funds, this would be for the Audits Division, of $408,000 $408,997. The last two, one would be the package 171, which will be the reclassification of audits division personnel, the subcommittee indicated in the public hearing that it approved of the concept, it approved of the need, but the reclassification process hasn't been completed yet. That the reclassification, they studied it, but to finalize it and ensure that the position reclassifications are warranted, we would like to see the Department of Administrative Services personnel people review them and approve them to ensure that the position reclassifications are appropriate and that the salary range is consistent with public law and intent for public employees. That in concept the package is approved, the reclassification is approved, but the funding be removed from the budget until we are comfortable or then assured that it's completed the process, has all the necessary reviews, that the reclassifications are in fact warranted, and they would come to the emergency board then for expenditure limitations. And we would put that also, sir, in the notes in the discussion in the budget report, so there that would be that trail, that authorization.
Okay. So the members understand what that means. You hear this is consistent with, again, what has been requested by the leadership at this point, in addition to our co-chairs, that there be some oversight for levels of performance that are attained.
And the last one adjustment is to transfer the cost of the reclassification of archives position to the emergency board, so that when the reclassification process is complete, just as with the audit division, once again, Secretary of State returns to the emergency board for approval. Now, in this case, we would have the funding sitting with the emergency board because it is general fund, whereas with the other positions, those are other funds, and it's just they would then seek an approval for expenditure limitation. So the funds would be there along with the history that the committee would acknowledge the need for the reclassification, but that the process hasn't been completed. Once it's been completed, it comes to the emergency board with that having been completed, reviewed by legislative fiscal with its recommendations that the reclassification be approved and the funding.
Are there questions? Any further questions? Senator Troll,
could we ask Secretary of State if he can live with these changes? Are they acceptable?
Yeah, Chair Butler, Senator Troll, members of the committee, we worked very closely with Dallas. We think he's done an exceptional job, and we think these are very fair recommendations about how to approach this.
Chair, I move for the LFO recommendations. Get ready for that.
Any further questions or comments? It's been moved by Senator Crow that the general fund recommendation of $10,215,621, other funds $22,424,713, federal funds held open at $1, non-limited funds of $162,612, total funds of $32,802,947, total position of 203 with 201.67 full-time equivalency be approved.
Also the appropriation of the emergency fund.
And the appropriation of the emergency fund of $152,048. Are there any dissenting votes from that? If not, relative to Senate Bill 5536, we'll move that with the due pass recommendation to the full Ways and Means Committee. At that point, any further comments from legislative fiscal?
None. In your package, there's some, it points out where there's some additional savings that accrue to the general fund because of reductions in appropriations division, and the audits division is lowering its assessment because of some of the reduced costs, and that will impact every state agency, so there are additional savings accruing to state government.
And Mr. Chair, this is my last and final Ways and Means Subcommittee as Secretary of State. I've had five now, and I appreciate the tremendous good work that you have done. It's been a pleasure to work with you and with your staff, and thank you.
I wanted to make sure, Secretary Kiesling, that you
received our vote of confidence and appreciation for this excellent job. You and your staff have done yeoman's job in working with us. This is an excellent reduction. I want the public record to reflect that the Secretary of State, Phil Keeling, has done it. He's done an excellent job. There were some issues that, particularly with the audits, that that we felt like that there was substantial savings, and he was able to move forward with these savings, and should be commended for the excellent job that's been done. It's been a delight to work with you and your staff, and we are pleased to have had this opportunity and honored that you've come before us today.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to compliment the good secretary on being very quiet today, not having to feed the piggy bank. I'm deeply impressed.
Mr. Chairman, in view of the fact that this is Secretary's last appearance before the committee, I think the evidence that he's a prudent man and a man that believes in forethought and foresight is evident by the fact that he brought a fistful of quarters of the day in honor of the fact that this is his last meeting for us. I think all of them ought to go.
It's pleasure.
thanks.
Thank you very much.
And I tried to let him off the hook.
That doesn't go to the general fund.
To the full committee, carrier to the full committee, we have, you got beat up pretty badly today.
Oh, I'm used to it. Go ahead.
That's, anyone, Senator Crowe?
Glad to.
Senator Crowe would be, I would be honored if Senator Crowe to the full committee, to the Senate, Senator Crowe, we gave one to Senator Lemon that week, and to the House, Representative Krupp,
sure.
You carried the Secretary, you'll carry the Secretary of Treasurer's, so you can take the treasurers and the secretary.
I would be honored to take the secretary and the budget. That's correct. And to make it a clean sweep, I should be down to the governor's budget.
I will probably do that as long as you don't come in leather that day. And bring your fishing cap. But
you don't need to egg him on.
Mr. Chairman, I promise to do my best not to throw the deal to the secretary.
Thank you very much again. We appreciate it. We'll close that hearing then. We'll come now to the construction contractors board, landscape contractors board.
Can I ask you to open this section on all of the bills listed so that we can carry them over to Monday when we
can? Okay. We'll go ahead then and open work session on House Bills 5036, 5037, 2020, and 2057, Construction Contractors Board, Landscape Contractors Board, Construction Contractors Fee Bill, Construction Contractors Board, Construction Contractors Board. Okay. We have Robin Lamont, Legislative Fiscal Office, with us today. We'll go ahead and turn time to Ms. Lamont.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, starting with House Bill 5036, which is the budget bill for the construction contractors and the landscape contractors, I have a handout for you. What I would like to do is offer the committee a couple of options. We can walk through each of these recommendations and you can act on them, or you can wait until I've completed the presentation and then adopt or not adopt my recommendations in total. What is your preference?
Why don't we do this? Why don't we have you go completely through? We have, when we had last gone through, there were, I think we had a pretty good understanding, so if you'll go ahead and give us just a complete synopsis and review, and then we'll take care of the actions of the
committee. Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my recollection is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that we had already walked through the current service level piece of this budget when we were in hearings on the budget, so I am not recommending that we do a walkthrough of the current service level and requesting, and right now I'm talking about the construction contractors for piece. So I am not recommending, I am recommending that you adopt the current service level at this time. Other adjustments. A standard reduction in Attorney General cost of $7,306, that reflects the Attorney General reduction. Adding the .48 FTE law clerk that they had requested. Reducing package 108, which was the hearings unit, to reflect their actual cost. Not approving package 100. I have incorporated pieces of that into package 102. In package 101, approving $159,545 for the existing 2.5 limited duration positions.
Now, those are limited duration, but the full-time equivalency is 2.5.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they were limited duration positions in the current biennium. This action would make them permanent full-time positions.
Okay, thank you.
I'm recommending that we defer action on the additional 4 positions that were requested, and recommending that the budget report urge the agency to work with the Legislative Fiscal Office and other state agencies on thinking the progress board to develop performance standards, outcome-based standards, and that they come back to the emergency board for that limitation and those positions after that action has been taken. I am also recommending that we defer action on the requested reclassifications. If you recall, it was over 30% of their workforce that they were requesting reclasses on, and asking that the subcommittee authorize the following budget notes. The Department of Administrative Services is requested to conduct a comprehensive evaluation of the classification structure for the Construction Contractors Board. The evaluation should include a review of the management staff ratio, internal salary relationships, the effect of the proposed reclassifications on internal salary relations, and should describe the factors that led to the need for an upward reclassification of over a third of the construction contractors' board staff. The department should report the outcome of the evaluation to the emergency board. The agency can request limitations for reclassifications upon submittal of the evaluation. In package 102, I'm recommending that we approve $254,693. This includes $76,693 for rent increases, $24,000 for the cost for contractors to pay their registration with credit cards, $24,000 for interactive voice response system costs, fax costs.
No quarter at all.
$130,000 for the first year of the toll-free number and for the Unix conversion. The combination of these two requests is intended to give the department flexibility to start their 1-800 number for consumer information and deal with critical issues having to do with converting their imaging system. I am recommending that there be a budget note in relationship to this, which would state as follows. The Construction Contractors Board shall develop a detailed, comprehensive technology and business plan for the imaging system conversion. The Information Resource Management Division analyst must approve the plan. The agency will establish an imaging project steering committee that includes the Information Resource Management Division analyst as a voting member. The Information Resource Management Division analyst will include as part of their project summary a status report on the implementation and risk mitigation process. Upon acknowledgement of an acceptable plan by the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, the agency will appear before the emergency board to request limitation for the imaging system conversion project. And related to that, I know there's another budget note too. And related to that is the request for funding for additional resources to produce the CD-ROM disk, and I don't know what that acronym stands for. So, and I am recommending the following budget note in relationship to that. The Department of Administrative Services Information Resource Management Division is requested to conduct a comprehensive evaluation of information resources management by the Construction Contractors Board. The Department of Administrative Services should report the outcome of the evaluation to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology and to the Emergency Board. The agency can request limitations for necessary information system equipment and training upon completion of the evaluation. The evaluation should include a review of all computer-related equipment that includes but is not restricted to the following: integration of paper documents with the automated system, imaging system conversion, use of CD-ROM information, integration of the interactive voice response system with other information systems, and use of the website and linking the agency to Oregon Online. And Mrs. Dudell tells me that they have been linked to Oregon Online since we had their budget hearing, so that these may not be necessary.
Are we increasing the DAS budget to pay for doing for this agency?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is my understanding that that is part of the function of the Information Resources Division, and they have agreed to this effort. Package 103, I am not recommending approval. That legislation did not pass. Package 104, also not recommending approval because the legislation is not expected to pass. Package 105 had to do with House Bill 2056. If you recall, we had that bill in front of us because the fiscal impact was eliminated based on a revised method for doing what the bill required. House Bill 2057, I'm recommending that we approve $117,384.1 FTE, but that we request the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule the limitation if the bill doesn't make it all the way through the system. And Package 107, I'm recommending that we approve $20,000 based on the assumption of passage of House Bill 2058. Package 108 has to do with the hearings unit. I'm recommending that we not approve this at this time. If, in fact, substantive legislation passes, we can establish a hearings unit. We can establish the cost in that bill. And then I've also added House Bill 2020, and I'm recommending that we add $162,772 in limitation and 0.75 FTE. This measure establishes licensing requirements for contractors. But again, I would ask the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule the limitations if the bill does not pass. And then item 5, Mr. Chair, since that's primarily your recommendation, could you speak to that? That has to do with the State Police Construction Fraud Unit.
We have received substantial information regarding construction fraud units and ongoing mediation has and will continue for some number of months, which will extend beyond the period of time that we'll be meeting as a committee. And by and large, a great deal of positive input was brought forward from some local communities where Ms. Moraine Bedell is engaged as one of the members of the OSP, Oregon State Police Construction Fraud Unit team in southwestern Oregon. The difficulty is that, by and large, it was felt amongst the contracting industry and the community, the construction contractors members, that they should not be paying this amount of money for Oregon State Police Construction Fraud Unit officers. All three of the officers, as my understanding, Mr. Bell is already being considered for another assignment in that area, which will give her some high profile and give her an activity in an area that she is particularly anxious to work in.
and that the other officers would also be assigned. It's our anticipation that the funds would be available in this overall budget to, depending upon the outcome of House Bill 2525 dealing with, relative to this, House Bill 2525 would deal with the officers, or the hearings officers, that we will have private investigators, enhanced private investigations, which I understand we're getting about 200% activity out of. A number of these are former state policemen can be hired to take the place of the current contractors we have with the Oregon State Police. And so regarding the construction fraud unit, I have received recommendations from the industry that we just remove entirely the construction fraud unit from and the Oregon State Police portion of the package, which was $595,328 from the construction contractors board. Are there any questions about that?
I have a question.
Representative Leonard is right.
I heard the testimony, excuse me, from the officers, and I thought they gave persuasive testimony. I don't recall hearing any public testimony opposed to that unit.
From amongst the officers, we did not hear.
From anybody, from the industry or?
There
was some from industry and from the board itself. I know Mr. Trudell raised some issues with respect to the cases being investigated were not prosecuted, but I didn't understand that as a criticism so much of what the police were doing as they weren't being followed up by the attorney's office. But I don't recall maybe anybody.
There probably wasn't public testimony I've received I've worked directly with a portion of the industry here over the past months as we've received information from the field including testimony from current members of the construction trade, including the Oregon Building Industry Association. I think we have members present that represent from the lobby side of that portion of the industry today, but by and large,
I would appreciate hearing from Mr. Chandler if you wouldn't mind.
You bet. We could certainly hear testimony from Mr. Chandler. That would be fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Member of the Committee, John Chandler, Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Building Industry Association. I'd like to state for the record that Scott Berry owes me a big time at this moment.
Mr. Chair?
Is
Mr. Berry out on the golf course this afternoon?
I can safely say he is not, but you do not want to know where he is. Okay, I'll say that. With the caveat, Mr. Chairman, that the CCD and the issues related there, too, are something I've worked very hard in my career not know the first thing about. We have had a number of discussions internally about the fraud unit, and our Southern Oregon chapter, Jackson County chapter, is quite pleased with the performance of the officer down there, but it appeared that that was more a function of that particular individual than the system as a whole, and that after kicking it around internally, it was the best strategy would be to take the state police out of that operation and give the authority back to the board, because it simply wasn't working out the way we intended when that deal went forward in, I think it was 95.
What other specific problems, then?
I would defer to Kim on some of that, Senator Leonard, because all kidding aside, this isn't an area that I spend a lot of time on. I do more of the land use side of the operation. I do know what I was hearing from our folks was that there was a lack of responsiveness, that things would, everything from too much utility work, not focusing on the bigger problems, and sometimes the complaint being made and is not followed up on. The original starting intent of that fraud unit had been, I'm thinking of one particular example, we're trying to get rid of fly-by-night operators. That was one of the things we as an industry wanted them to do. That's bad for us. We have people out there who were selling jobs up. And I don't recall what part of the state this was, so I won't get specific. The feeling of a part of our membership was that they were, the Friday night, putting off a lot of time on construction site theft, which is a problem, but they were letting some of the fly-by-night operations go by. And the wrong emphasis, and even when that was brought up to the unit, that they didn't change their focus. And that, even though we don't like having the job site stripped off, that wasn't the point of this particular unit. They're supposed to be doing fraudulent activities, not testing activities. I hope that was helpful.
Yes.
I'm concerned that we don't send the wrong message out there to some of these fly-by-night folks who are really professional criminals, really, and that they hear that Oregon no longer is as tough as it was, and it's open field, and we can go in and not suffer any consequences. And so what are we doing in lieu of not having the state police do this operation? What else is there that would mean that we're tough on these kinds of people who are ripping people off? And that's what we heard. We heard a lot of evidence that people get ripped off.
Chair Butler, Senator Dutrow, I'm Ken Kudell, Administrator of Construction Contractors Board. Prior to 1995, what did we do at that time? Prior to 1995, we would take action against an individual who had violated the laws, and it violated in a number of ways. I think the fly-by-night that you're talking to, that you're referring to, would be somebody who is not registered and takes money, and you have a limited number of ways to make the consumer whole, plus a limited number of ways to punish the person who took this money. We have a civil penalty provision. We also work with the cities and with the counties, and they can arrest the individual also.
Well, what you're saying is that we won't do anything in addition to what we did before we hired the state police to tackle this problem. So we'll just go back to the old way of doing things. Is that what you're saying?
Senator, that's correct. However, what the program was created to deal with turned out not to be construction fraud. When the legislation passed, we thought, because again, we don't have a definition, we don't have a law that talks about fraud. We have theft by deception. What we had was the perception that we could do something with a certain class of cases. And now what we're finding out is what we can do with that is, and we've got some legislation in line to deal with that. If a contractor gets three claims, we'll put them on probation and work that out. Those were the kind of cases that we had, though, were contractors who had excessive losses, and we're going to deal with that as construction fraud. It turns out it's not criminal fraud. It's not fraud that can be prosecuted. It's perhaps dishonest. It's cases where a contractor goes bankrupt and leaves some people greatly harmed, but they're not cases that the OSP can deal with, and without some improved legislation, it is what we can deal with. But one of these bills that's before you today would allow us to do that. The unregistered contractor, we dealt with that, and the unregistered contractor that works and takes money from somebody, we would take action against it and have them arrested if we couldn't get them stopped. The same as we did prior to 1995.
Can I just read from, and I have a number of telephone conversations noted as well, but let me just read from, this is an interagency letter between Construction Contractors Board Director Prince Washington of August 1998, dealing with this particular issue relative to the CCB and the Oregon State Police. The board has reached the conclusion that the current marriage between the CCB and the Oregon State Police OSP is improper for the following reasons. The size of the construction fraud in Oregon was overestimated and is relatively small. Number two, construction fraud, while small, is an important part of the problems that consumers deal with when purchasing services from construction contractors is best addressed through the comprehensive programs properly administered by the board appointed by the governor to handle such matters, the CCD. Number three, the cost of current OSP CCSU construction contractor fraud unit program over the last 3 years clearly has not equaled the benefit, and these funds can and should be more effectively used. Next point, criminal fraud investigations will be more effectively conducted by the CCB investigators in conjunction with the local police authorities and agencies. And finally, fraud problems are best handled through A, prevention, and B, combination of administrative, civil, as well as criminal sanctions. In fact, criminal sanctions are quite often expensive and ineffective with regard to the control of construction fraud. And then I think this is a 13-page memorandum. I've got the former chair of the board of the independent contractors, and then even letters from central and southeastern or southwestern Oregon. I express my support to soundly funding the CCB budget. However, I wish to take exception with one item, specifically proposing the forthcoming board budget. And as much as the total budget comes from fees that are paid directly by the contractors like myself, it talks about budget, governor's cuts, proposed cuts, never an easy matter. We in the industry are customers, public is welfare is at stake. If there are cuts to be made, I would like to suggest you to eliminate the $600,000 per biennium schedule for the Oregon State Police OSP Construction Contractors Fraud Unit, CCUFU. I have total respect and admiration for the OSP and all other police agencies, lifetime of ties to the law enforcement community, so forth and so on. And as I say, I've got other communications that we've received, but by and large, the cost-benefit ratio and the overestimation of the problem that started a few biennia ago has really not materialized, and I think we did have testimony that, and I did receive a letter at the request of the OSP as to the amount of time that they were actually engaged, and they do spend a great deal of time, but a lot of their time is spent in training as opposed to even investigating. They spend a huge number of hours training in the community, which a non-OSP officer could easily do.
Do we have any guarantee they're going to do this?
Well,
they got $600,000 now by any, and they could use that money and do something else.
I think
they could hire some more investigators. They could, who knows what.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, at this time, my recommendation doesn't include any consideration for using those dollars. So if there is an intent to direct the agency to hire investigators or to take some other action with regard to it, we would need to increase their budget by that amount.
Mr. Chair? Yes.
I didn't have the benefit of having those communications that you have for whatever reason. I'm relying on the testimony we heard in public hearing, and the officers made the case that the local police agencies oftentimes don't understand construction fraud. When they're called to the scene, they don't understand that a crime has been committed. As I recall, their testimony was persuasive that oftentimes their presence is a deterrent to those that come to our state and defraud what I remember being elderly and the most vulnerable of people out of tens of thousands of dollars. So, I agree with Senator Phillips, if the money's not spent there, we could just simply say local agencies can handle the problem that flies in the face of their testimony that they oftentimes don't recognize.
Well, there's two issues there that I'd like to respond to, and that is, number one, there are, in fact, investigators that are presently hired, contract investigators that are presently hired by the Construction Contractor Board, and that has been and continues to be an effective way to overcome some of the difficulties and even misunderstandings that are had. And number two, I believe that what will happen as a result of our budget notes that we'll add to the budget as we pass it out will encourage them to add the additional positions or to come back for after they've resolved the issues. Recognize that the mediation could go on for some period of time. But I have had telephone calls, and again, I have solicited on my own this is Independent Contractors of Oregon. Independent Contractors of Oregon's supports elimination of the $600,000 from CCB budget as designated for the CCFU. We believe that CCB could use the funds more wisely in the following issues. Number one, resolving disputes and claims in a timely manner. Number two, educating the public about construction industry and not just about selecting a contractor. Number three, having a staff that would be needed in order for CCB to improve the programs that have already been put in place. And I think that's where we're headed with this budget today, is to go ahead and encourage those folks to not put out $600,000 in a biennium for three police officers, but expend a portion of that from the construction contracting board for the private investigators that they, similar to what they already have on staff. Representative Hanson?
Well, I concur with your decision, and there's probably a couple factors that lead me to do that. One, I don't think this is a very good model of using three state police officers to try and cover the whole state without any real definition of what they're supposed to be doing, what types of things are. Some of the cases that seem to take a great deal of time that they were involved in, I think the Williams family fraud, that's clearly something that is in the mission of the state police. Whether they're funded through this or any other way, that's something they should be doing. It's probably something that involves RICO violations that should be investigated by the FBI. Theft from construction sites is a real local policing issue that should be handled by city, county cops who's ever got the authority in that particular area. But I think the worst part of this model, and I don't think the model worked real well in terms of being, you know, good, precise spending of public dollars, but I don't understand why the construction industry is singled out to pay for general policing functions or even specific policing functions. I don't think we asked the auto industry to fund two or three state police officers to deal with auto fraud. We've got people selling cars on curbs in my neighborhood. We've got lots of different kinds of fraud that occurs around the auto industry, but we don't ask auto dealers to fund three or four state cops statewide to deal with it. There's lots of industries that have maybe some peculiar fraud issues with them, but we either handle those through some forms of internal investigators. Real estate board has some investigators. The securities industry has some internal investigators. But we don't ask any other industry to fund rank and file cops to do investigations. And in this one, from everything I've either heard through the public testimony or from some of the people that have contacted me in my office, is this particular model doesn't seem to work with good coordination between the industry and the people that are doing this policing function. So I think we need to end it as a failed model. Certainly they're filling in with some different types of activities that may be more appropriate, would be a good thing to do, but I don't think this is the model that works.
thank you, Representative Hanson. Senator Crowe?
And that's a pretty persuasive argument. But I guess what I would put in front of that argument and back of that argument is there was a problem that this addressed that nobody was getting at. And somebody in the legislature, a contractor, thought this was a solution. Now, maybe if it didn't work and it wasn't the right solution, you may be right on that. And maybe we ought to find something else. But what I don't see if we're ending that is any intention to do anything else about a problem that is partly theirs as a profession to deal with.
Chairman,
I think they ought to be dealing.
Maybe we could ask Mr. Trudell if he feels like that with the appropriate resources freed up, and we've talked about this, I know that we're putting you on the spot here, Ken, because the folks that you work for would like to see another dozen OFP folks funded by the Construction Contracting Board, because we feel like it's a great place to pick up some OFP money from. But do you feel like that within the agency, with the appropriate resources, that you could be able to continue to enhance your current investigative abilities and continue to marshal the folks together to address this issue and the Construction Contracting Board throughout the state?
Chair Butler, what the Construction Contractors Board would need to do, if you choose to not fund this, we need to invest in more investigation by our contract investigators, and we also need to invest in money to work more cases with the Attorney General's office. Those are the two areas where one of the problems with this system is that construction fraud is not necessarily criminal construction fraud, and we're not getting at the construction fraud part of it that we would be dealing with the Attorney General's office.
I will find a budget note to those.
May I refer in that regard to just one other conversation with the former chair of the PCB, who is a former state police officer. The indication is the construction fraud unit will not work. There's two different cultures. One is to investigate anything and everything, whereas the private investigators have go in with an experienced background. Most of them have policing and construction backgrounds, and they appear to be able to get right to the heart of the issue and recognize the difference between a dispute between parties relative to what was to be done and true construction fraud. Most of these folks have some policing background with some degree of construction background. And the suggestion was made to me, and this was only a suggestion from the former chair of the Construction Contractors Board, was that possibly we consider a total of $200,000 for this would be in the form of a budget note to recommend that they bring back an amount. These are other funds, and the emergency board could allow them to continue to act on their on a program that could be developed, flushed out, and brought back. But the suggestion was a total of $200,000, which would provide you right now four additional investigators at about about 200 to 300% increase in the number of contacts and cases of construction fraud and construction difficulties, because the suggestion is that there's nearly twice the contact, and then an additional $50,000 for Attorney General fees, a total of $250,000 was the suggestion that was made by a former chair of the CCG. As just a suggestion, Representative Leonard is recognized.
And I don't have a problem with that as a plan if it were in front of us and we were discussing that as an alternative. The problem I had is we're talking about deleting money to the OSP and not replacing it with anything or plan right now. And I'm concerned that that's been a really bad message, because I'm convinced
that they were protecting some of the vulnerable people out there in their function. I just want to respond. Representative Hansen said, who else pays for police services? As if the Oregon State Police, as most of us know, check for hunting licenses, fishing licenses. They're funded through fees when you buy your licenses. Port of Portland Airport funds its own police force, although it's in the city limits of the city of Portland. They pay for their own police force. So there's, we're replete, we're replete with examples of that occurring. So in and of itself, I don't think that's a persuasive argument. To me, saying that this money could be better spent on PR is like saying, you know, close your local fire station and use the money for billboards for fire protection. I mean, it's a great
promotion.
I mean, that's, my reaction is not unlike that idea, is what I'm trying to say. And then the last point I'd want to make is, if this is a failed model and there's problems, let's fix that. Let's get in and work on what the problem is. I mean, maybe there needs to be more control by construction contracting board over that unit, which I don't see as a problem. But I can't support eliminating this function without a replacement in front of it.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Representative Leonard, and the issue before us. I think we can address that. Aaron Budget knows it would direct them to come back to the emergency board. The funds are their funds, and they're still available. And the fact is that they do have investigators that are working today as we speak, that are private investigators within the board. So the model is there. The difficulty is that the difference in the culture is such that the direct mission of an acting OSP officer is a little bit different than the culture of just plain construction difficulties that we have in the field today. And I think we've heard the ample testimony regarding the difference between just shoddy workmanship and a misunderstanding, and the fact that the bad gangs have been tracked down, occasionally by the OSP, and that's certainly part of their function, whether they're hired by, as Representative Hansen said, whether they're hired by the used car dealers of the state or by the construction contractors board.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're not going to be able to finish this budget this afternoon anyway. If the committee agrees, I could come back with a couple of options to discuss on Monday. And I think there are a couple of different ways that we could look at this that might deal with Representative Leonard's concerns and the concerns of other members of the committee.
Let's carry it over to Tuesday afternoon. Monday is a tour day.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we can't do that. We will carry it over to the next meeting day, or I will have to reschedule, which I think the earliest that we can do this then would be Wednesday.
Mr. Chairman, I have a suggestion. If we convene here for the tour, tap the committee open, carry it over the following day, we can have the tour and the hearing.
Let's do that. We'll convene here for carryover on Monday, and we'll be able to hear it then Tuesday morning. Any objections to doing that, then we'll have Robin bring us, bring us back our issue. Any objections? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and carry over to Monday.
Carry over
all of the House bills, 5036, 5037, 2020, and 2057.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Now, this is that.